If, like me, you spend any time searching YouTube for physics porn, you'll be very familiar with Dr. Brian Greene, who appears in dozens of Nova Science specials, video blogs, and the late-night talk show circuit. As well as being Professor of Physics and Mathematics at Columbia University, he's a co-founder of the World Science Festival, an annual week-long series of seminars and panel discussions that takes place in New York. And if you're interested, loads of those panel discussions are available to watch back in full on the YouTube channel. This Sunday, Dr. Greene brings his live show, A Time Traveller's Tale, to the Bruce Mason Centre in Takapuna, and he joins me now. Dr. Greene, thanks for coming on BFM.
It's my pleasure. Thank you.
It might be that I'm particularly interested in this kind of thing, and I do actively search out explanations for aspects of physics that I find fascinating, but there does seem to be a huge appetite for modern science communication that's designed for lay people. Does it feel to you like the wider population seems particularly interested in science at the moment?
Yeah, without a doubt. You know, I think it's really actually always been the case. We as human beings search for understanding, right? We want to understand how the universe came to be, how we came to be, why there's life and consciousness. These questions are part of our DNA. And I think it's really been the case that in recent decades, scientists have started to realize the power of bringing these ideas out to the general public, that people do get excited about these ideas and want to learn about what's happening at the cutting edge. So yeah, I think it's a real golden age of bringing science out to the general public.
And of course, helped by the internet. But the spin of that, of course, is that like fake news, there's loads of fake science out online to be found. How much of a problem is this, and how do we deal with it?
Well, I think it's a big problem because certainly in science, and I think actually in the world more generally, all opinions are not created equal, right? There are such things as facts, evidence that really needs to guide our judgments about what's true and what's not. And someone who is just blindly going through various YouTube videos, for instance, can easily stumble upon a trove of information that is best called disinformation, is not based on our understanding of things. So I teach my kids all the time, the vital thing is to source whatever material you're watching. Who's giving it? Where is it coming from? And can you trust the source?
Some other science celebrities such as Brian Cox in the UK or Neil deGrasse Tyson, even the late Richard Feynman or Carl Sagan, have spoken in the past about some within the establishment looking down their noses at science communicators and them being a little bit showy. Is there that snobbery still within the science community?
Yeah, I don't think so. You know, you mentioned the World Science Festival, you know, both in New York and now also in Brisbane. And when we started the festival, we had no idea whether or not scientists would warm to the idea of programming that was created for bringing their cutting-edge research to the public. But we now have scientists knocking down the doors, wanting to be part of the festival, lobbying us to have a session on this or that piece of science that they've been involved with. So I think that notion of somehow watering down science and losing the integrity of the ideas is really a thing of the past, because scientists recognize if you do it right, if you bring science out in a way that's accessible, clear, and really focuses on the ideas themselves, you can communicate a great deal of information in a way that people can understand.
You've named this show A Time Traveller's Tale, and I guess what I find interesting about that is that, you know, as I say, I do watch a lot of these physics things online, and you often see videos using the slightly kind of clickbait titles that are about time travel to kind of get you hooked, and invariably the video ends up saying, well, yes, the laws of physics do work backwards and forwards, but time travel as we think of it probably isn't possible. And to me, I almost think that the time travel tease is a shame because of how exciting some physics is even without time travel. You know, entangled particles, time dilation. I mean, these are pretty sexy concepts, right?
Sure, absolutely. Now, look, we will be talking about some of that, but this show in particular will not only have a focus on these common discussions of time and time travel. We're actually going to take the audience from the beginning of time, sweep right through to the end of time, traveling time in the sense of walking along the timeline of the cosmos, allowing us to see how human beings and how human creativity and how the human search for meaning and understanding fits into the grand scheme of scientific development. So it's not a limited focus only on time travel per se. It's traveling through the timeline of the entire universe.
Can I talk to you a little bit about your specialist area, string theory?
Sure.
It seems to have gone in and out of vogue over the past couple of decades as a candidate for a unified theory of both relativity and quantum mechanics. Where do you think it sits now in the minds of most physicists?
Well, I think most physicists realize that string theory is an incredibly potent force in our modern theoretical physics research. But certainly, as yet, we all agree that there isn't a shred of experimental evidence that we can point to that shows that these ideas actually describe our world. The flip side of it, though, is in the last decade or two, string theory has tentacles that have grown and reached out to so many distinct areas of science, particle physics, condensed matter physics. And then because of that, string theory is now no longer an isolated branch of science pursued by those looking for the unified theory. Its tools and techniques are being used by a great range of physicists right across the board. So I'd say that as a unified theory, jury is still out. Exciting developments. It is a healthy theory, and we just hope one day that we'll be able to adjudicate it using observation or experiment. But in terms of its influence on science, it's very broad and pervasive.
On that particularly, one of those criticisms is that it's not testable, that you can't prove the theory doesn't exist because the sizes are just too small to measure. Do you think that's a fundamental truth, or will science sort of find a way to be able to give us a definitive answer, even if that's 100 years from now?
Yeah, I mean, if it were an absolute fundamental impossibility to test string theory, I absolutely assure you I would not work on it, and I don't think any of my colleagues would either. It's really the latter description that you gave. It's difficult to test string theory. We have to be more clever to extract indirect signatures of physics that really comes into its own in extraordinarily tiny domains, or domains that you can only access with fantastically high energy. And whether that takes the 100 years that you mentioned or 1,000 years or more, who can say, right? We can't predict the rate of progress in physics. But these ideas are in principle testable, and it's up to us to figure out how to achieve that.
The crux of string theory, that all, and forgive me if I kind of make a mess of this, but that all sort of subatomic particles are manifestations of tiny vibrating strings of energy, isn't that similar to what quantum field theory says, that particles are blips of energy that pop into existence inside a quantum field? Are those things common?
Yeah, I mean, it's a similar sounding idea, but it's actually quite distinct, because in the traditional approach to particle physics in quantum field theory, what you mentioned, particles are modeled as little infinitesimal dots. They have no internal structure because there can't be anything inside. They are infinitesimal in size already. The idea of string theory is that that picture may not be correct, that what we call the elementary particles may actually have some length, some extension, and that extension would be manifested by a little filament of energy, and a little filament looks like a piece of string that can vibrate like the string on a musical instrument. So there really is a fundamental difference between the starting points of quantum field theory and that of string theory. Now, as a small footnote, not to make anyone's head spin, in the last decade, we found profound connections between string theory and this other approach, quantum field theory, the more traditional one, which has brought them together in a very indirect, very subtle, but very powerful way.
For such a huge theory with so much work to be done to get closer to an answer, I mean, what do you do day to day? Do you slice off a tiny aspect and spend a week concentrating on it and then move on? I mean, can you talk a little bit about your day-to-day specifics of what you do?
Yeah, I think that's sort of true in most fields, and certainly it's true in string theory. Each researcher typically focuses on some small nugget of a problem that they find particularly interesting and think that they might be able to make progress on. And what we do is we read the papers of our colleagues. That new stuff is coming out every day. We kick around ideas with fellow researchers, with our students, with our postdoctoral fellows. And ultimately, each of us, in the best of all days, will sit down at our desk and do some mathematical calculations, or put those calculations in a computer and do some manipulations or simulations of that sort to try to make progress on the little small steps that collectively will result in big progress.
For you personally, what was your last sort of big win? The last time that you had a eureka moment that it was like, okay, awesome, this is giving me the motivation to keep going here.
Yeah, well, you know, there always are little ones of that sort. But if you ask me to reach back to the real big ones, the defining ones that happened once or twice in a career, I would say I was working with colleagues and trying to see whether the fabric of space could not only stretch and contract, as Einstein taught us, but whether the fabric of space can rip apart, something that Einstein didn't think was possible. And we were able to do calculations using the mathematics of string theory to show that this more robust structure does indeed allow the fabric of space to tear in a manner that results in no catastrophe, no disaster. The fabric winds up repairing itself, but in the process of doing so, it fundamentally changes its shape, what we call its mathematical topology. And to do something that goes beyond Einstein's own understanding, of course, was deeply exciting.
When gravitational waves were confirmed, it was described as opening up a new world of research in the same way that the telescope did. In the time since they were observed, has there been any sort of wins for string theory as a result?
Nothing for string theory. It's not impossible that in the future there will, because one of the potential signatures of string theory, it could be that these little strings that we imagine lying at the heart of matter, a few of them could have gotten stretched out by cosmic expansion since the Big Bang. So if there's a big string wafting across the sky, as it vibrates, it will send out a particular spectrum, a particular signal of gravitational waves. And if those gravitational waves can be detected, they have not yet, but as you're saying, we now know that they can in principle be detected as we've collected those emitted by two colliding black holes. If we could find the gravitational waves associated with a vibrating filament stretched across the sky, that would be a wonderful piece of circumstantial evidence for these ideas of string theory.
So there's actually, doesn't exist a predicted imprint of what
yes.
that would look like?
Absolutely. And that's how you search for these waves. Even for the black holes, they had many, many templates that they could match the wave shape to figure out what must have been responsible for the wave that they were detecting. And similarly, you can write down a template wave shape for a vibrating string in space. And if you find that wave shape rolling by your detector, making it twitch in a very peculiar pattern, that indeed could be the sign of string theory.
Before we leave you, I'm interested to know what the immediate future of science research and communication looks like under a Trump presidency. We touched on fake science and untested claims earlier. I mean, are you worried?
Yeah, I'm worried. I think everybody needs to be worried, but I think that worry needs to be turned into vigilance, right? We have to watch what happens, really see what's coming out of Washington, and not in some way get complacent and allow things to shift into an unfamiliar and, frankly, most of us would have thought impossible place, you know, 6 months ago. So scientists are coming together, you may know, for a march on Washington in April, and the community is energized in a way that maybe that's a silver lining of all this nonsense that's happening. Scientists will stand up and really participate in the democratic process in a way that they really have not done, at least in mass, in the past.
It's been great talking to you. Thanks very much for your time, and I look forward to Sunday.
My pleasure. Thank you.
Thank you. That was Dr. Brian Green, whose live show, A Time Traveler's Tale, is on Sunday at the Bruce Mason Centre in Takapuna. Student tickets start at $59 from Ticketmaster.